Welcome back again to BadQuaker.com. This is podcast number 50. Today is November 15th, Tuesday, November 15th, 2011. And I mentioned this the other day. It's even though this is only podcast number 50, it's actually something like our 111th audio file that we have. We have interviews and we have audio articles, in addition to having, you know, actual articles on the site badquaker.com. And the reason I'm bringing that up is it's becoming more and more obvious that the vast majority of our listeners are listening on iTunes or through the podcast feed, and they're not actually going to the website badquaker.com. So there's a lot of stuff that you that may be there that you may not know about or you may have missed. So that's kind of the purpose of today's podcast. I was going to read one of the files that is there at badquaker.com. If you look across the front, you see all the gentlemen in their suits. I'm the one on the far right. If you look down where it says home, FAQ, that's frequently asked questions about Bad Quaker, definitions, pictures, etc., across the right underneath that row of pictures. If you click on about Bad Quaker, you get an explanation of what a Bad Quaker is, according to us at badquaker.com. So I'm going to read this it's a very short little explanation of what we consider a Bad Quaker. What is a bad Quaker? To answer that, let's look at what a good Quaker is. The people traditionally known as Quakers are actually called the Religious Society of Friends, and we at Bad Quaker have nothing but respect for them, their beliefs, and the hard work that they've done during their 360 years of consistently seeking ways to improve the human condition. Quakers vary widely in their beliefs and practices, but are perhaps best known for their unshakable position on individuality. Quakers hold fast to their belief that no one person should be honored above or below another. As a logical outworking of this position, Quakers formed the first true anti-slavery movement and almost single-handedly shifted the established Christian doctrine away from the acceptance of slavery. Recognizing women on equal footing with men in the early 1600s and consistently holding to that position through physical oppression and even torturous death, Quakers were the origin of the modern women's rights movements. Some other interesting tidbits about Quakers. Titles of honor. Quakers refused to use or acknowledge titles of honor. That is to say, titles given to men or women for the purpose of distinguishing them apart or above other men or women. Titles like Judge so-and-so, Officer so-and-so, President so-and-so, Father so-and-so, Your Honor, Your Highness, Your Eminence, or any other title used to honor an individual above the rest of humanity. Likewise, standing, sitting, bowing, kneeling, saluting, or adjusting one's attire upon command, or for the purpose of bestowing honor, are not practiced by Quakers. To acknowledge authority or bestow honor by ceremoniously removing one's hat or bowing or any other activity is to agree with the notion that some humans are better or somehow more important than others. This concept we reject. Swearing of oaths. Quakers do not swear oaths of any kind. In addition to the practice being clearly forbidden in Scripture, the act itself is illogical and to some extent insulting. For example, let's say Bill wants to sell Jack a boat. Jack asks Bill, "Does this boat float?" Bill answers, "Yes, to my knowledge, it has no leaks and it floats." If Jack asks Bill to swear the boat floats, does he not infer that Bill may be lying? If Bill is the type of a person who would lie about the boat's buoyancy, how would adding the words, "I swear," magically change Bill into an honest boat salesman? So again, the oath is illogical and insulting. if Bill is giving a statement in a court of law and Jack asks Bill if he swears to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, is Jack not inferring that Bill may be lying when he speaks without this magic oath? If so, and if Bill is in fact the type to lie, how is it that these magic words suddenly convert Bill the liar into Bill the honest man? What about oaths of allegiance and of office? Again, they're both illogical and insultive. If Jack tells Bill, "Join our cause," and Bill responds, "I will join your cause," are we then to assume Bill has not really joined and his honor is not really at stake unless he says the magic words? Are we to assume that Bill walks around on a day-to-day basis utilizing a loophole in honesty, and if he fails to say the magic words, he's never obliged to his statements? What if the community gets together and decides Bill should be the final decision maker for the town? Are we to assume that Bill will rob the town treasury unless he repeats some magic words swearing to follow edicts written on some paper? Quakers understand that when one speaks, one is either telling the truth to the best of their knowledge, or they're telling a lie. There is no third choice in the category of truth labeled oath truth. If one is honest but mistaken, adding magic words do not change the outcome. If one is lying, adding magic words can't change the lie. And if one has honor, one will tell the truth with or without the added burden of magic words. If one lacks honor, it cannot be conjured using magic words. Bad Quakers. Where bad Quakers part with good Quakers is in the area of self-defense. Quakers tend to be pacifists, and while bad Quakers appreciate and respect that position and even agree that was certainly the position Jesus took while on earth, bad Quakers are not pacifists. Bad Quakers tend to be armed at all times and are willing to defend not only themselves, but their friends, loved ones, property, and at times, even strangers. More on bad Quakers. Bad Quakers embrace the zero aggression principle, or ZAP. Bad Quakers recognize the state as an entity that exists by the use of aggression, lies, and theft. Therefore, the bad Quaker rejects the state as a legitimate form of government. Bad Quakers do not reject government. Bad Quakers realize that government, when entered into and maintained by peaceful, voluntary means, can be legitimate. But when government adopts the state as its method of existence, it is no longer legitimate. The bad Quaker understands that every act of the state, no matter the short-term result, will produce evil. While embracing the ZAP and acknowledging the state as the vehicle of evil on earth, the bad Quaker must embrace peace methods of resisting the state. The bad Quaker understands that the state is economically and morally unstable and therefore doomed to fail. But the bad Quaker also understands that if the state fails at any stage prior to its maturity, it will simply grow back. Therefore, while individually working to separate ourselves from the state and remaining dedicated to educating the masses as to the evil nature of the state, the bad Quaker must not actively assist in the collapse of the state. Now, as to what bad Quakers are not, we are neither organized nor are we an organization. We have no membership and we certainly follow no leader. We have no manifesto, and we neither have nor hold to any constitution written by the hand of man. We are free in our thoughts, and we seek to be free in our day-to-day lives. We ask no one to be our servant, and we refuse to serve others by any means other than our own choice. We are enemies of the state, but we are not combatants of the state. Again, that is from badquaker.com. If you go to the main page and you look across the front there, you have home, frequently asked questions, and about Bad Quaker. Click on that about Bad Quaker, and that's where you'll find that printed out. We'll go ahead and attach that to today's page, so it'll be available. We'll put the audio version on the page, on the About Bad Quaker page, and it'll also appear on today's daily updated page. And, of course, you're probably listening to it in iTunes, which is what started this conversation to begin with. I did get some email last Thursday, I believe it was. We published our article or podcast, which it was an article. I think it was Thursday. We published the article at something like 5 or 6 a.m. And it didn't, iTunes didn't publish it in iTunes for, there was a long delay. I'm not sure exactly when it was. But so I mentioned that on Friday's podcast that iTunes hadn't posted that yet, and of course iTunes posted it. So I want to thank the people who emailed me and let me know that that indeed they did post it. I was able to go over there and verify that. I don't know why the delay took place. It's probably some technical thing on one end or another. I'm pretty sure we did everything right. They may have needed to verify the location or whatever. Also, occasionally they verify our status as the clean status or G rating or whatever, however the terminology is. So they may have had to listen through it to make sure that it fit that category, or they may have been backed up or something. But I do appreciate the emails letting me know that iTunes went ahead and posted it. Also, if you're one of our subscribers over on Facebook, I made mention, I believe it was Sunday evening, that we were real close to 200 likes to our page on Facebook, and I asked for help getting us over 200, and the outpouring was amazing. We were something like 228 or something like that. The last time I checked, 229 something. So the outpouring was just tremendous. I appreciate that. That's spreading the word and letting more people at least have the opportunity to hear the podcast and see if they have an interest in it or not. If if someone doesn't particularly like this podcast, that's perfectly fine. It's of a it's a particular flavor, and each podcast that's out there, and there are lots of them. There are all kinds of libertarian and anarcho-capitalist podcasts, and we try to, even though this is somewhat religiously themed here at BadQuaker.com, we try not to make it a true religious podcast. We try to stick more with politics and news. It is going to be tainted by my beliefs as a Quaker, but we try to put it forward in a way where that even the atheist or the agnostic or the Jew or the Christian who's not a Quaker, or the Muslim or the Hindu, or anybody who happens to be listening, we strive to make sure that we're neutral in that area, and that we're not trying to push any kind of religious agenda, because that's really not our goal. As a matter of fact, there was some talk. I was hoping that I could get Stefan Molyneux on the podcast with me. And Stefan is one of the great leaders of anarcho-capitalist thinking right now, and a great philosophical thinker. And he's purely atheist. And I was hoping to, I still may be able to, I was hoping to get him on the podcast and allow him to express his opinion on how he's got a wonderful book about morality, how his morality is not does not require a deity, does not require faith in a deity, and it's a really good book. And so I was hoping that maybe he could come on and talk about that, talk about morality from a strictly non-theist point of view. I don't know if I'll be able to convince him of that. He's a very busy person, and we're a very small podcast. So if I can't get him on, then I certainly wouldn't hold it against him. I know he has a lot of irons in the fire, as they say. Okay, so that covers the About Bad Quaker section. What I'll do, since this podcast has a lot of stuff in the beginning and a lot of stuff after I read that, what I'll probably do is just cut out that section about Bad Quaker where I read from the page, and I'll just post that on that page, and then the whole thing will be on the page with the podcast. So what we could do is just pop over to pick up some news and see what's happening in the world. I was somewhat, no, I was more than somewhat, I found a lot of humor in the headlines that Newt Gingrich was now on top of the pile of the Republicans seeking the Republican nomination for the presidential run. You know, as long as the Republicans are claiming to be quote unquote conservative, and they prop up people like Newt Gingrich and Mitt Romney, and as long as they're holding up these people to try to tell us that they're conservative, it just loses all legitimacy, you know. That's really the thing about if you really honestly compare the left and the right. There are a lot of people on the left who will openly tell you that they're socialists. And there are a lot of people on the left who will openly tell you that they're progressives. And they are very honest about this. And you begin to look on the right, and you see someone like Newt Gingrich who claims to be a conservative. And then you look at the actual legislation that he's been involved in and the statements that he's made and his track record. And it's anything but conservative. And the same way with somebody like Mitt Romney, or, you know, the list goes on. All these Republican clowns. I suppose you always have to make an exception for Ron Paul anytime you're talking about politicians. But other than Ron Paul, you know, you look at him and they do exactly what Nixon said. What was that, 40 years ago? When you're campaigning, you campaign like a conservative. But once you get elected, you have to govern like a, I can't remember the terminology he used. He didn't say liberal. I believe he said moderate. I think he said you get elected by campaigning as a conservative, but once elected, you have to govern as a moderate. I think that's what he said. And, you know, Nixon is widely recognized as a horrible president and a liar, and, you know, a lot of negative things are attached to the idea of when you just say the word Richard Nixon, you say those words and people get really negative images in their minds. But at the same time, that's absolutely the truth, what he said about that. That's what politicians do, especially right-wing Republican politicians. They talk the conservative talk, and they say all the magic words so that the religious right, you know, if they just say a few key magic words, the religious right says, oh, they're one of us. And if they say just a few key magic words, the right-wing gun enthusiasts are automatically jump to their defense. Oh, yeah, they're for gun rights. And if they say just a couple magic words, then the you know, the people who are really, really focusing on pro-life get all enthusiastic. He's going to outlaw abortion, or he's going to stop federal funding of abortion, or he's going to stop abortion support or whatever. No, they're not going to do any of those things. They're going to sell your gun rights away. They're going to spend more money than their predecessor, and they don't care one bit about individual issues like abortion or gun rights or any of these other things. They only care about getting elected. And once they get elected, they always do, and they will compromise with the left. So when you elect someone who is a Democrat, a liberal, who comes right out in the open and says that they're a socialist, at least you're electing an honest crook. But when you're electing a Republican who claims to be a conservative, what you're just electing is someone who thinks you're stupid, who thinks you're dumb enough that they can behave any way they want. As long as they say the right words in election time, they can do anything they want once they get elected, and you're going to be dumb enough to vote for them again. And unfortunately, it's worked. It's worked for over 100 years. So that's my little rant about seeing that Newt Gingrich is now on the top of the pile of Republicans, and that's the kind of a pile that I'm not going to go into explicit details to explain what it's like, otherwise we'd lose that iTunes clean rating. So, so if the Republicans vote and they get Newt Gingrich as their... Well, I've said this before. You know what the really thing is? Who was it that wrote a thing on that? Was it Karen? Oh, I'm not sure. I better not say. But anyway, I just read a thing last week that pointed out something that I've been rolling around in my mind for months now. The Republicans don't want to win in 2012. Now, unless you've read the article I read, or unless you've been thinking the same way I've been thinking for a while, that may shock you. But no, the Republicans have no intention of winning the presidency in 2012. This is exactly like what they did in 1996, when you had Bill Clinton as it was in the White House, and he was doing all kinds of stuff that really upset people on the right, but it didn't upset people on the left. Anything that was going wrong, they blamed on Congress, and Bill Clinton looked pure and clean and white. Ooh, that's not a color, that's not a racial reference, by the way. Like I should have said like drifted snow. Anyway, but Bill Clinton came out smelling like a rose in any situation, and everything bad was blamed on the Congress. So the Republicans going into the 1996 election, they had several good, solid candidates that could have beat Bill Clinton. And who did they go with? They went with a guy who the Republicans used the excuse that, well, he deserved the nomination. That was Bob Dole. Well, Bob Dole was washed up in 1980 when Ronald Reagan beat him. I'm not saying anything bad about the man as an individual person. I don't know him, so I can't talk about that. I can say that Bob Dole was a compromise artist. He was a compromise artist the whole time he was in office. And that's why he wasn't able to stand up to someone who showed a little bit of principle like Ronald Reagan. Had Ronald Reagan actually had the principle that he portrayed in the 1980 election, the 80s would have been much different. Unfortunately, Ronald Reagan got elected and did exactly what Nixon said. He continued talking the talk, but he continued raising taxes, spending more money, expanding government. In spite of the fact that everybody was saying that he was shrinking government, he was growing government the whole time, spending more and more money. He lowered taxes once and raised taxes 11 times. That's Ronald Reagan. But at the time that Ronald Reagan beat Bob Dole, Ronald Reagan was the better choice. And Dole could not have won at the time. And then why would you run, when you had better candidates available, why would you run a guy like Dole, a guy who is somewhat dull, not fun to listen to, a cranky old man, or at least he appeared that way, a guy who walked around referring to himself in the third party constantly? Is that how you say that? Referred to himself in the...
Bob Dole thinks this is a good thing. Bob Dole's supporting this.
Oh, he sounds insane. Why would you put him up against somebody who literally his opponents call him Slick Willie? Bill Clinton was a polished, professional con man. And therefore, if you're going to beat a con man like that, you need to get somebody who's polished and a professional con man. Well, now we have another polished professional con man in the White House that the Democrats have put in there. And you want to run somebody like Newt Gingrich against him? Or Mr. Plastic Man, Mr. Ken Doll, straight out of the box, Mitt Romney? Come on. This is who you want to put up against Obama? Or Mr. Double Talk Kane, who doesn't know in within the same sentence whether or not he's for abortion or against abortion or for the Fed or against the Fed? The guy that everybody talks about is, oh, he's a former pizza executive. No, focus on what he really was. He was a Fed chairman. Oh, well, he's not a Washington insider. You can't become more of a Washington insider than by being a Fed chairman. You can't be more of one of the elite, of one of them, than being a Fed chairman? So this is what the Republicans offer? They offer a tainted product in the version of Newt Gingrich? They offer a plastic, laughable Ken doll in the form of Mitt Romney? Or they offer an entirely fake person, Kane? This is what you have to offer us? Or a crook like Perry? This is what you have to offer? And the Republican voters are falling for it? The main part of the Republican Party has no intention of winning in 2012. They're putting these people up to choose from them. These losers, they're putting up for you to choose from. Then the Republicans will pick one of these clowns, one of these airhead clowns. And then the electorate and general will look at them and see that any one of those three men, four if you include Perry, but I don't think he has much of a chance, whether we're talking about Newt Gingrich, we're talking about Kane, or we're talking about Romney, we're talking about a person that has a fraction of the polish and of the intelligence and of the smoothness and of the gracefulness in appearance and the silver-tongued capabilities of the liar and deceiver Obama. And so why would the Republicans offer those three empty-headed clowns to go up against Obama? It's because the Republicans consistently gain more power in Congress at every minute that Obama's in office. So they will continue through 2012, through 2014, to add more and more Republicans into Congress, and they'll give away the 2012 presidential election. They don't care. That's why they're offering the three clowns that they're offering. And the Republicans voters don't see it. They're taken by it. They're fooled. And they'll go out and they'll vote. And then in 2012, when it's really time for the real election, none of those Republicans can energize the main voters out there, the mainstream, the bulk of the people who vote. They're not going to vote for any of those three. And so Obama will be reelected in 2012, and the Republicans will cry, and they'll use that as an excuse to get more power in Congress, and the game continues to be played. And the voters never realize that they're just pawns, and that they're being toyed with. And these people laugh at them, because they understand how easily the voters are manipulated, and how this game is played. It's a sad thing that we tolerate this. I don't understand how year after year this goes on and it just repeats. This is nothing new. This was going on. Yeah, look what happened. The exact same things were happening in the 50s and the 60s and, you know, all the way back through, going into the 20s, going in at any particular time in the American electoral process. These games were being played, and yet the American public can't see it. They think this voting ritual gives them the appearance that, oh, I have a say in my government. If you don't vote, you can't complain. Why? How does that make sense? That doesn't make any sense at all. That's like, well, if you don't rob somebody, you can't complain about robbery. Hey, there's no logic. It doesn't follow a logical pattern of any kind. I've asked numerous people, explain this logically, how you come to this conclusion. I live in this country. They forcibly take my taxes. If I don't take my taxes, and if I resist, they will kill me. How can I not have the right to complain? Just because I didn't go down there and throw a vote for one of the two idiots that they put up, that they prop up, that I know are not running anything, because you look at any of these politicians and they don't have the brains of a Brazilian tree slug. So I'm supposed to go and choose between evil idiot A and evil idiot B? And that gives me the right to complain? No, you know what? As long as they've got the gun shoved in my face, and as long as they take money out of my pocket and do with it what they please, I've got the right to complain. And so do you. Oh, okay. So, let's see if we can get a lighter note. Ah, here's a fun one. Chelsea Clinton hired at NBC Nightly News. And the beat goes on. I probably shouldn't comment on that because I'll just end up right back where I was, ranting and raving about how silly the American public is, thinking that this reality show that they watch that comes out of Washington every day is somehow real life. Oh, yeah. So they hired her for the NBC Nightly News. Imagine yourself. Let's say you're an NBC affiliate in Chicago or Los Angeles or even New York or Atlanta, Miami, Dallas. You're an NBC affiliate in any of those cities, and you're let's say you're an experienced news person working in a newsroom in one of those places. And let's say you've put years in and you've received various awards for your work in the news. And you're in line to go up to the big leagues. You're going to go to New York. You're on the fast track to being taken into a spot with the network, like on the Nightly News. And then Chelsea Clinton is appointed to that position or gets hired to that position. That you know there's somebody who thought they were going to get that. There's somebody who spent years in the industry building a reputation and building an audience and building a rapport with their viewership. And Chelsea Clinton got the job. Oh, man. That's just, somebody, I don't know who, but somebody really got frosted over that. I can guarantee that. Okay, without just getting into a complete comedic thing there, let's get away from that, because that's just, there's nothing productive in that story. Oh, boy. I don't know if you can hear it or not. We've got some pretty good wind going this morning. So I don't know if you can hear that wind whistling through the windows. I've tried to put the screening on my mic here to try to block out some of it, but some of it may come through. So if you hear some background wind screaming through the windows, I apologize for that. So here's an interesting story from over at Blacklisted News. Blacklistednews.com is a pretty good website. I try to stop there every day. Sometimes I don't, but here's a pretty good story that was on there yesterday. I think it was yesterday. Yeah, 14th. So it says, Chinese economist says that their regime is nearly bankrupt. According to this individual, who appears to be not only a renowned Chinese economist, but also a well-known Chinese TV personality. So, I don't know if he's legitimate as Chelsea Clinton or not, but anyway, according to him, I guess it's a him, I would assume, yeah, Larry Chang, he says that the China's gross domestic product is going in reverse. He says that the regime is in serious economic crisis and on the brink of bankruptcy. He says individually every province in China is another Greece. Well, that's interesting. You would think all the fake money they're buying from us that they'd just be rolling in wealth. Evidently, all those dollars are not worth that much. So here's another story from Blacklisted News. The headline is, "How much eugenics are we willing to tolerate?" And this one touches a very emotionally charged topic. Evidently, there's a new prenatal test that's available, that's becoming available for Down syndrome. And so if I understand this correctly, what they're looking to do is encourage miscarriages of babies with Down syndrome. And the idea is to essentially their goal, or at least this is the accusation that their goal is to eliminate Down syndrome by eliminating everybody who could possibly reproduce another generation of people who could pass the genetic traits of Down syndrome. I don't know that that's really what their intention is, it's a confusing thing, really, as we move into an area where technology begins to border on the morals to this extent that it becomes very, very difficult to begin to see how far technology should go and how far it can go. And unfortunately, technology will always go further. It will always go further, faster than morality can adapt to it. So the problem, and I hope this is not too much of a stretch for my audience, but the problem comes in with anything like this, and it's entirely skipped in this article as far as I can tell. But if these options were available on the market, then there would be layers of opportunity and there would be layers of choice. But where the problem comes in is that oftentimes the technology is being driven by tax dollars that are being taken from people who would not normally support this type of technology. They would not support this kind of research, and yet their tax dollars goes to support it anyway. And then once the government has gotten involved and tainted the process, then you end up with outcomes that the market would not necessarily have ever produced, or would not have produced within the same time frame. So who knows? I'm thinking about something Walter Block has said a few times in dealing with the question of abortion. Walter Block says, and I'm going to horribly misstate his position, I'm sure, but essentially he says technology could fix the abortion issue so that it wouldn't be a one or the other choice. We're not that far from the capability to where if we say, okay, well, a woman is pregnant and this is an unwanted pregnancy or an unexpected pregnancy, or it's a result of a rape, or any of a number of things that might cause a person to have a moral confusion about whether or not to get an abortion. And if the market were allowed to drive technology, then one market option for this could be, it's not that far of a stretch for us, could be to have an abortion without killing the child, without killing the fetus, actually keeping it alive and putting it up for an adoption as an unborn child, and then transferring it, either keeping it alive artificially until it's mature, or transferring it as a live fetus to a recipient mother who'd be willing to take it. This is aspects of the free market that would appear if it weren't for the government coming in and providing solutions to all these different issues, and providing what the government always provides, which is aggression. They steal our tax dollars and they distort the market with it. Lies. The government's never going to allow anybody in this argument to come up with any solutions that are involving the truth. They're always going to tilt whatever they're doing in order to get more power for the government. So what would be the answer to this Down syndrome question, or what would be the answer to abortion? If the government weren't distorting the market would provide an equitable and a moral solution. But since the government is destroying the market is not capable of doing that. The market's hands are tied. And then we get half solutions, and we get very dangerous solutions offered to us through the force of government money providing us these things. It's a scary concept when you think about it. But it's also a wonderful thing to think about if you realize that someday, I've made this argument for a very long time, the state is financially unstable. The state is socialist in its purest form, and socialism cannot economically support itself in the long run. There's always booms and busts. There's always gluts and there's always shortages. And generally the gluts and the shortages happen at the same time, just in different commodities. So there's always overproduction of something while there's always shortages of something else. That's an aspect of socialism, and that's an aspect of the state. So the state is entirely economically bankrupt. It can only rob from people so much, and it can only feed off of the host so much until the host is not able to support it anymore. Additionally, the state pretends to provide us justice, but the state is incapable of having justice. I've written articles on this, and so I'm not going to go into the entire argument here, but the state is incapable of even recognizing justice, much less providing justice. So the state is legally unstable. It's morally unstable. It's not founded on anything that gives it any kind of right to exist. The state is founded on violence and aggression and theft and deception. So the state is morally bankrupt. It is legally bankrupt, and it is economically bankrupt. And the state is doomed to fall. And when the state falls, assuming we've all done our jobs and we've spread the message of liberty and of peace and of the zero aggression principle and the golden rule, if we've done our job in spreading the word about these things, when the state falls, the market will rise. And problems like this situation with Down syndrome and the questions that come with it, and problems that come with abortion and all the confusing questions that come with it, those things will fall away. Those things will disappear because the market will solve those problems. The market solves any problem that it faces as long as the market's left alone to do what the market has always done. It fixes those things. And as a matter of fact, the state is our problem, and the market is going to fix the state. Not violence, the market. Not aggression, the market. The market is going to defeat the state. And that's how we defeat the state. We participate in the market, and we exclude and ignore the state. And as more and more people do that, the state gets weaker and weaker. Right now, the state's getting stronger by the second, because the few people who recognize the state as being the evil that it is are wanting to fight against it and revolt against it. But that's exactly what makes the state stronger. That's exactly what strengthens the state. But as more and more of us begin to trade among ourselves, and we bring the market, we free the market by freeing ourselves and freeing each other, as we do this, we kill the state. A million little razor cuts at a time, we kill the state. And it never recognizes what's happening. Once I compared the state to a dragon, where if you see this dragon from a distance, it looks like it's covered in shiny plates of armor. But if you get up closer, you realize it's not shiny plates of armor. It's little tiny pictures of shiny plates of armor. And each one of those little pictures is really a bandage. And if you yank that bandage off, underneath it is just raw, sore flesh. And so as we, one at a time, as each one of us lifts that bandage off and we see the state for what it is, not an ironclad beast roaming around undefeatable and fully armed in plates of impenetrable armor. No, that's not really what the state is. The state is a nasty, hideous beast that's covered in pictures of armor. And all we have to do is just expose it and ignore it. And pretty soon, it's gone. And the state is defeated by the market, because there's nothing, there's no challenge the market can't face. There's no challenge the market can face that the market can't defeat. Okay. So let's wrap it up with that. I didn't really mean to go into all that kind of a direction, but that's where we ended up, so that's how it is. Thank you very much for listening to BadQuaker.com. If you enjoyed the podcast today, if this is the first podcast you've heard from us, there are better ones. Don't take this as an example. But we do have a variety of podcasts. We have a variety of interviews. We have some really good interviews. Check out the one with Kurt up there at the Free State Project in New Hampshire. They're just doing miracle work up there. Robert Higgs was on the show with us. We've had a variety of people, you know, Jeffrey Tucker. We've got the Jeffrey Tucker interview is available at badquaker.com. Check out the articles, check out the podcast, check out the interviews. Go over to, if you're hearing on iTunes, you know, take a minute when you're near a computer, go over to badquaker.com and click around, and you might like what you find over there. Thank you very much, folks. We will probably be back on the road again in the very near future. Our ongoing family issues and health problems with a very, very dear loved one. We're still facing that. And so if there is a gap, and I don't know when that might or might not occur, this could happen. We may not get any notice at all, and we may just, you know, disappear from the internet world for a day or two or for longer. If this happens, it is because we're dealing with these family matters that we have an obligation to handle. But either way, I'll try my best to put something up each day for you guys. And we do attempt to put something up 5 days a week, Monday through Friday. So check that out. Even if it's not on iTunes, roll over to badquaker.com and look around. Drop me a note. There's places on there that you can add comments. Just say something, and one of us at badquaker.com will respond back, I promise. Or you can email badquaker@badquaker.com or me, ben@badquaker.com. And thank you very much for listening. Goodbye.